Using Strike just using his debit card. So that's a killer thing here. And it is a really slick and seamless experience, but that's not the biggest feature. The biggest feature is that it's LendMan is no longer just useful for spending, it's useful for accumulating, or essentially trading your goods and services for Bitcoin. And this is a major, major thing, because currently the only way to accumulate Bitcoin is to buy some Bitcoin yourself, or get someone to pay you Bitcoin. And that can be very tough, because most people in the world don't own Bitcoin, and the people that do don't really want to sort of get rid of the Bitcoin that they have because they hold it. So this is really, really interesting, because now you can someone can pay you with fiat money and you get Bitcoin, right? Essentially, you're selling your goods and services not just to Bitcoiners, but to anyone. And that's a major, major feature. Stripe really changes the equation here. Really, this is most useful for people that don't have a bank account on the internet. And the privacy and regulatory implications of WhatsApp as well should not be overlooked. As Jack Dollars describes in his post, they're already using Stripe in his family's cannabis business in Colorado. Stripe was built as a way to replace credit card payments, which are difficult due to the lack of banking relationships in that industry. Stripe is literally banking the unbanked, not just the way we think of the unbanked. This should become popular for merchants that use Bitcoin as a way to not deal with banks. For example, this COVID therapy provider only takes Bitcoin because of FDA restrictions. They don't have a bank account. I suspect that their customers would much rather use a debit card for purchases than Bitcoin to buy products. Let's try to get. Right, so if you're not familiar with COVID therapy, I was looking into this many years ago as a way to help with your allergies. Basically, it's not FDA approved, and you have to at that point go to Mexico. But basically, what it is it's helmets or kind of worms that that stay in your stomach that don't breathe, but have the effect of causing your immune system to not overreact to external stimuli, which is essentially what allergies are. Back then you can do it in the U.S., so you have to go to Mexico or something, and it costs a lot of money. Really, all they need to do is ship you some worms, and it's not very hard to do. But check out this page. There's a whole beginner in Bitcoin guy in there, because they now take Bitcoin for the worms that you can get and use for your home therapy and so on. But they have a whole beginner's Bitcoin guide on their website, because Bitcoin is the only thing that they pick. And my point here is that if you have something like Stripe, now they can just take a debit card, right? They don't care. They're getting Bitcoin on the back end. You can try to shut down their bank account, but they don't have a bank account, so it makes it a lot easier. And that's the main thing that I'm seeing out of this product. It's going to be, I think, the killer app for Bitcoin, for Lightning for me. Lightning use right now is mostly limited to basically Bitcoin people that are particularly wanting to test out this technology. But Stripe, solves a real problem for real people, right? Mostly gray and black market merchants that don't have a bank account or can't get one. It makes it so that their customers who don't know anything about Bitcoin are still able to pay fairly easily by registering a bank account, right? They don't have to have a complex 17-step step process to get Bitcoin on their phone, and then they can finally pay. They have questions that we don't really know the answers to yet. But this, to me, is the killer app for Lightning, because it makes it very useful for people that are trying to accumulate Bitcoin. Most of you that are holders that want to earn Bitcoin, this is going to be the main way in which you side hustle. If you want to get paid for something, you're not going to hook in. You're not going to make it so that you hook in with Stripe, so you get Bitcoin right away via Lightning and so on. And I think that's going to be a really, really cool thing. noticed some good news with more useful tools coming out lately. I did read the 341. I'll do the 342 hopefully this week. And basically, 341 is about a taproot and how it combines single key, data bucket hash, and a more complex scripting hash like data script hash. So, this is an excellent thing to come to Bitcoin. It does require slightly larger keys, or at least UTXOs and so on, but the benefits are well worth it because nobody knows whether or not it's multi-sig signal or something more complicated and so on. Also, Carl Yohanov, he's a Charlie Wolf on Twitter. He's added taproot support to BTC Debugger, and he has a guide written here. And basically, he goes through how to check a tap script and so on, and all of the Merkle localization and going up the Merkle path and so on. It's really good post, and it's a really cool tool. And if you want to play with taproot, that's the place to start. Bit 119. Which I covered last week. It's under some scrutiny from Bitcoin Talk. So Greg Maxwell has an interesting objection here. How do you imagine preventing an attacker from spending all your coins at once and spending most of their value to a fee? You have 3-1 Bitcoin outputs, which require the output to be one Bitcoin payment to address BC1 Apple. Transaction which spends all 3-1 to a single one BTC and BC1 Apple will combine, and yet turning 2 BTC to fees is probably not what you intended to provide. So he has some objections. He also talks about how he just wants more flexibility in something like this instead of something kind of rigid like I've checked and compiled and verified. Jeremy Orban also did it as well. And anonymous developers EMSCP XJ wrote on the Bitcoin Dev mailing list about how you can smooth fees in an interesting way. Miners are the ones that collect fees, so they can afford to sell fee insurance or something like that. Your transaction will get in 4 blocks or will pay you some amount of money. So it's a way to compensate or something like that. And as a result, if users buy it, then it should really smooth out the fee market, which is something that I think will be amazing, because the fee market right now is just a lot of guesswork with not a lot of data. But having an actual working market with insurance payments and things like that should give you a good idea of what the fee should be for a particular block in order to get in. Right now, there's a lot of guesswork. There's a lot of people that are way overpaid just to get in on particular blocks and so on. So this will help a lot in that regard. Connor Brown has an extremely readable post on what Bitcoin's development philosophy is. And basically, it's move slow, don't break things, because this is money. And very readable. Connor's a great guy. It just ran out of this week. Really good stuff. For using Trezor, please take care of the physical safety of this device. As this post from Kraken shows, a hacker can extract the seeds from the device in as little as 15 minutes. You are okay if you use a BIP39C, but this is a critical flaw in Trezor wallets that you should miss. If you have the physical safety of the actual device, you should be okay. But if it's, if you're leaving it somewhere or something like that, then you've got to be very, very careful. Let's take a look at some other lightning news. Besides Zap's big announcement, Phoenix Wallet has a new release 1.1.0. The most interesting part of this release is its support for other URLs. Now, if you're not familiar with what that is, a lot of lightning stuff requires multiple rounds of communication and so on. Here, just sort of scanning your lightning invoice. It figures that out, and then it tries to pay, and it does the negotiation sort of in the background. For more complex things that really aren't, getting paid out of the channel, you have some channel capacity, you want a submarine swap so you can get some money out of that channel, something like that. That's not that easy. So this is MWRLs basically make it so that you can scan it kind of like an invoice, but you know, like in your node knows now what to do to negotiate sort of like a payout from your channel and so on, or to establish more money into your channel. So that's a really cool feature that Phoenix Wallet has implemented in any listener base. Christian Decker has put together a curated list of plugins for C Lightning. Most of them have to do with just sort of like monitoring your Lightning node in some way, shape, or form. It's pretty cool, but it's curated and, I guess they're fairly safe. Zeno Arca makes a compelling argument for why Bitcoin is interesting as money. The argument goes out to having strict decentralized controls that give it credibility. Definitely worth it. So, Zane wrote on his own blog, Zane1.co, why is Bitcoin interesting? And, it's a no-brainer. It's a really, really good money. There's integrity, it's supply control. And, it's a shortish article that you can definitely read and get something out of. Sent to people that are maybe curious. The BCH death tax. I don't want to put too much of a spotlight on it, but I think it does sort of like give us lessons. It teaches us something about how when you give up decentralization, all sorts of things fall apart. So if you don't remember, basically last week, Jiang Zuer basically said, hey, me and my friends are going to enforce a death tax for 6 months and give about $6 million to the developers, and we're going to work with any blocks that don't do it. He had some weird justification on how Bitcoin was really going to pay for it, which I talked about in last week's episode. But basically, Peter Risen, who's a Bitcoin Unlimited guy, which is a client of BCH, he came out and said, you know what, I don't think this tax is a good thing. And basically, he put out a Bitcoin Unlimited improvement proposal that says, okay, any attempt at forcing a dev tax, we're not going to listen to. So it's kind of like a user activated software, but not really because it's centralized. So basically, it's a Bitcoin Unlimited software that they're going to do as a way to avoid the tax. And there were apparently some anonymous miners that also came out in opposition. And Bitcoin.com, Roger Ver's company, basically started backtracking a little bit and said, well, we'll only support this if the community is behind it and so on. Gee, Roger. Yeah, that worked out. I guess he learned something from 2X. Zhang Zuer replied by suggesting a miner vote. So he comes out and says, hey, you know what, we still want to do the tax cut, but let's just have the miners vote here. If the miners, two-thirds of miners agree, then, let's go through with the tax. And basically, that's kind of like a rubber stamp, because they already have the ability to orphan, or they're threatening to orphan, and if you're orphaning, you need more than 50%. And given the 10-block rule, you likely need closer to 70%. So they probably have something like 70% hash rate, in which case, they're going to vote for this tax plan because they already have 70% of the hash rate. So it's kind of a deceitful way of looking about it. But I wanted to go through that exercise of, who's saying what and what's going on in BCH, because centralizing something as BCH did, they essentially gave up decentralization in order to get rid of SegWit and have larger blocks and so on. This has some serious long-term consequences. If you're trying to force people to do anything afterwards, well, they're going to rebel because they're not used to having an authority over them. And this is why I think there's going to be more chance splits in BCH and BSB, maybe even on this very issue. You might see Bitcoin Unlimited, Bitcoin Unlimited and Bitcoin ABC, something like that, instead of BCH. So that's entirely possible. Bitcoin Gold had 251% attacks that only cost $1,200 each, in which they attack us $36,000 each time. So are 251% attacks on Bitcoin Gold. And basically, they screwed exchanges out of some money. Essentially, what's happened, what someone could do is they can hire for exchanges to make money if they're not KYCing their customers and so on. So I suspect that's the direction that we're going to go. I would prefer that they just delist some of these coins that just have really ridiculously low hash rate. But this is sort of the direction that they're going in. Lastly, I am in London for the Advancing Bitcoin Conference. And this is a conference that Leon Johnson puts on. He was a former student of mine. And we're going to be talking about Easy Peasy. There's a lot of people that are going to be there. It's going to be really fun. It's going to be a whole day of lots of talks, and then there's going to be workshops on the second day. If you're a developer, it's a fantastic conference. And of course, if you're in town or something like that and come to the conference and you have some of my books, please bring them and I'll sign it for you. Right? Like, I don't just physically sign, I also PGP sign after I take a photo of what I sign. So, that's something as well. Lastly, I have scholarships available for the next day programming blockchain seminar. So I had them in Las Vegas, Hong Kong, and Antwerp. If you are interested in learning Bitcoin, these are the next 3 dates. Hong Kong looks like it's going to happen, but it might not, depending on how coronavirus is going. There have been some things canceled in that region of the world. So. I'm keeping a close eye on it. But Las Vegas and Antwerp are definitely happening. And if you want to apply for a scholarship or know any really good developers, I would really appreciate sending them this way, because I have money from different companies and sponsors and so on. They want to see more Bitcoin developers, and I'm trying to teach them. So if you have them, please let get them to apply and so on. Let's go to my Twitter feed, and then we'll do the long read on the strike stuff. All right. Let's see. Did Nakamoto.com buy already no articles for 11 days? Oh, that was. That was last week. And let me see if there's anything that has happened since then. No, nothing's for 24 days. I guess that's kind of a dead website. Just pointing that out. In the future, people won't spend so much time investing. They'll just keep their money in Bitcoin and work on building stuff. And that's something that I hope that everyone will do. I feel like I did all of these. Yeah, I did all of these. Okay, so it's this one. If you split once, it might be the other person. If you split twice, it's probably you. If you're about to split a third time, it might be a good time to self-reflect. So obviously, talking about BCH a little bit, and also relationships, I guess. Michael Goldstein posted this amazing video, The Run of the Golden Bull. If you haven't seen it, it's very inspiring and gets people sort of hyped up about the bull market that's coming. But I would like to see that video go viral. So this story I found on Treasury News. The Fed has bought 70% of their Treasury issuance since October. Basically, whenever Treasury issues, the Treasuries, right, the U.S. Treasury issues these things called Treasuries that, get like 2% per year or something like that. But if there are not enough buyers, basically the Fed has to step in and, they're the lenders of last resort, so they buy up whatever's remaining. It turns out something like 70% of all treasury sales were bought by the Fed. So essentially, they're putting new money into the economy, which we would normally call printing money, and they printed $221 billion from October to December. So in just 3 months, basically, the M2 has expanded by 2.7%, which is insane, right? You don't hear about this, and like I said, monetary expansion is like 6-7% a year, and not a lot of people actually recognize that. This is why good store value is so important. fun with the little game that we're doing.
I was a little inspired
by some of the extreme ownership stuff where Jaco will like to do. Basically, everyone wants to point out what's wrong with other people. They very rarely look at themselves. And that's something that I want to work on this year, is instead of complaining about other people, I want to work on what will help me be better. We went from the land of the free, free as a speech, to the land of the free, free as a leader. The former is more important than the latter, and the latter is an illusion that's opened by us through monetary expansion. So, used to be that, you know, free speech, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, and all that. It's not that way anymore, right? Like, it's much more about free benefits, the entitlements that the welfare state and things like that. Basically, it's not really free because it's paid for us through the inflation tax. Whenever Bitcoin price goes up, here comes with the analytics, which is why it's not real demand. The mental gymnastics on this guy is unbelievable. But then again, I can blame him. He knew about Bitcoin early and didn't buy. So Peter Schiff knew about Bitcoin back in 2011. So you too would be a little bit better than you didn't get any of that outside of instead check gold, which, I mean, it's not okay, but it hasn't done anything like what Bitcoin has. So every time Bitcoin goes up, he makes some sort of excuse like in this tweet. So I just wanted to point that out. I did the pack the 341 walkthrough. I do have the scholarship, so you can click on this link as well. So I did get to do a butchering class, and basically I took a bite of raw meat, and I gotta tell you, it was pretty good. I really like it. It's kind of like the middle of a rare steak, and I could see how at least our ancestors, when they used to eat meat, after a fresh kill or something like that, they would have really enjoyed something like that. No coders do not understand the tremendous time risk that they're taking on. And that's just, a lot of no coders just don't understand that the risk they're taking by not buying some Bitcoin. And hopefully that becomes more and more clear as a lot of this stuff continues. All right, so Nathaniel Popper had a 20-tweet tweet storm. And basically, and it was about an article that he did. He wrote that he was like, Bitcoin's not doing well, it's gone down, and drug lords love it, blah blah blah. And basically, everyone on Twitter was like, what do you mean it's gone down? It hasn't gone down at all in the past few months. It's actually gone up, and in the past month it's gone up a lot. So basically, that's what everyone's criticism of Nathaniel Parker was. And then he does a 20-tweet sort of about that particular article, and he doesn't mention that thing that he got wrong once, which was why I was pointing that out in this one. And then he says, I think if you read the story, you would also see that the discussion of price was not a primary or even secondary focus of the story. And I call bullshit on that because the title is Bitcoin has lost steam. And the first two sentences were the last few months have not been good for Bitcoin, the value of the digital contest and the job. If there wasn't the primary focus, why is it in the lead, right? Why is it front and center of your article? So Nathaniel Popper is, just a weasel. He doesn't like to admit that he's wrong. This is part of the Bitcoin derangement syndrome, but I think he has it. There are more future Bitcoiners being born every day. And that's pointing out something that I've noticed, which is that a lot of Bitcoiners are having kids. Those are going to be the future Bitcoiners. I would bet to anything that Bitcoiners are having more kids than non-Bitcoiners, on a per capita basis or something like that. Just pointing that out. Writing my newsletter for Monday, my original expense is the newsletter that we're going over. I did a survey on how much people pay for rent. It looks like most people between $1,000 and $5,000. Bitcoin is building stuff that actually meets people's needs. There's a real lack of good stores of value in the world. Shitcoins are building stuff to justify printing money. And that's just been true. And of course, I have the newsletter there. All right, so we're going to do a read-through of Jack Lowers' post announcing Strike by Zap. And I'll provide commentary as I go if there's anything that. Well, before I do that, let me see. I do have a lot of comments. I usually don't have this many. See if there's anything here. What happened to GraphQL? A lot of the functionalities in Taproot that GraphQL might be inside would be too. So I think we kind of want to see how Taproot does first. What do you think will be the next big upgrade post the 3.1 cross input signature aggregation that makes coin joins economically rational, which will increase the identity set and privacy in a really market driven way, which I think is super exciting. What is Strike? We're going to talk about that. That's good. All right, so let's do a read through of this. Yo, today I am thrilled, excited, and incredibly proud to release Zapsmo's ambitious product today. The direct result of years of Bitcoin plus Lightning development, countless hours of user research, and intense product iteration led all to this. Okay, I can kind of tell, right? Because he almost stumbled on this, which is a really good signal to me that this is something that the market really wants. Today we are announcing Strike, an application that allows you to make lending payments with your bank account or debit card. Using Strike requires the following: a debit card, or bank account. That's it. No wallet, no loan, no channels, no swaps, no liquidity management, no nothing. It's an application sitting on top of our infrastructure piece on Olympus, designed to ensure that we have a Bitcoin that we believe has the best shot of achieving our mainstream hopes and desires. And a lot of posts like this from companies tend to be kind of exaggerated, or especially from shitcoins, like they tend to overpromise and underdeliver. This, I think, actually has the potential of what he's saying. And if anything, I think he's underselling it a little bit. The story, with describing Zap's design and product decisions, I frequently describe Zap as available in response. Back in September of 2019, I announced Olympus. Olympus was initially designed as a lightning-enabled fiat ramp to allow users to buy Bitcoin inside of their existing Zap wallet. It was our answer to how we scale lightning to 2 million of users. However, as we tested, tinkered, tried, failed, and most importantly learned, our product developed. Those 4 months of intense user research and study inspired the in-house hackathon that birthed Strike. Strike was never the goal or the plan, but rather a response. And I'll tell you, as a startup guy, almost always the best products come out like this, right? It's something, you think the market wants something, you put it out there, and then you talk to the users, and they go, you know, what I really want is this. And you build it for them, and the next thing you know, it just, like, it opens the floodgates. I've been part of multiple startups that basically went through that exact thing. So, these are the best types of products. And ICOs and stuff where they're like, oh, we're going to build this, and this is exactly what we're going to do, and so on. All right, our ideas and assumptions were simple. If we allowed users to instantly buy BTC delivered over Lightning by using a debit card linked to their Lightning wallet, we should have it solved. All right, so the idea was, okay, let's have a fiat on it. Now we can get BTC. All right, in Lightning. Okay, great. Right and wrong. As we continue to experiment, we learned very quickly that we weren't providing the right answer to the wrong question. In my Olympus announcement, I propose that Olympus solve the following question. How do we get a user into or onto Lightning with the least amount of friction? However, what Olympus saw was how to get Bitcoin onto Lightning with the least friction. We completely missed the user. Very good analysis, right? This is how you can tell somebody is learning at a startup, is that they conceptually had it wrong. It wasn't about Bitcoin or Lightning. It was the user that needs to use Lightning for something. And then very, very good insight there. Thank you, Ronaldo. Would it be possible to create a decentralized messaging app on top of the Bitcoin blockchain? There's a decentralized messaging app that's already on top of Lightning that I think works, and basically it's using something like Signal Protocol to communicate between nodes. So I encourage you to check that out. I think I talked about it a few weeks ago. Alright, so for this blog post, I wanted to walk through our journey and learnings and introduce our new product and all we have in store for the future. This blog post may be a bit longer than my typical post, but I believe the learnings from our research and outcome that is Strike is monumental and transformative. So without further ado, let's take a deep dive exploring the tremendous amount of friction involved in getting a user onto Lightning, Unfortunately, quick responsibility has been seen as a feature. The market's volatility screams out there today, and it is Bitcoin's volatility, traditionally to the upside, that has attracted many of its existing users and market participants. One of the more popular value propositions of Bitcoin in its first 11 years of existence is wealth creation. Buying Bitcoin, holding Bitcoin, and having its value and purchasing power go up as time goes on. However, in a consumer merchant setting where people are using Bitcoin, volatility is a non-starter. Frequently, when testing users would buy Bitcoin delivered over Lightning to their Zap wallet shortly after price would move, we ran into a scenario with users where the Bitcoin price fluctuated upward of 5% after the initial purchase. This caused the following: not spending BTC because it's appreciating, or not spending BTC at a loss because of hopes it would appreciate again. And this is definitely a keen insight right there, because people, if you have to have two steps where you have to acquire Bitcoin first and then you spend it, then there's a time delta that makes it very difficult for the user to compensate. If it's appreciating, they might want to hold it. If it's not, then it's like, I'm going to wait until it gets back up. Totally correct, at least from a method of payment rail that Lightning kind of is. Merchants have an entirely different relationship with volatility, which makes accepting Bitcoin extremely difficult. The typical merchant prices their operations in the denominated fiat currency. A volatile day for Bitcoin could throw away months of profit for a given merchant, and the risk reward profile just wasn't worth it. Yeah, and that's definitely true for merchants, right? Like, they don't like volatility because it makes sales hard. They want to sell stuff, and that's the main thing for a merchant that you have to think about. Taxes in the United States: Bitcoin is taxed as property, and spending Bitcoin in exchange for any good, service, or currency is a taxable event. Plain and simple, but you do not know what this extends to the Lightning network and every single Lightning network payment. Yes, purchase of your phone and refill gift cards, like your Yolz articles and your Satoshi Place are all taxable events that need to be reported to the IRS. This was a major oversight with the designing Olympus. All activity was a taxable event, and this created enormous amounts of overhead for each individual and for myself. Yes, that's back is nice, but is it worth capital gains taxes? And on the user research and testing, the answer was no. Users enjoyed micropayments, cross-border payments, social tipping, and so on, but it did not evaluate it as worth it by taking into account the tax consequences. And this is a major tax that anyone has to pay whenever they have to interact with Bitcoin. It's unfortunately regulatory. As a merchant, this was arguably a bigger issue. Merchants were accepting Bitcoin via Lightning and every now and then converting to fiat to pay for operational expenses. The tax headache was not worth it, and nearly all merchants opted out of accepting Bitcoin. The regulatory and taxing in the U.S. is a huge impediment to allowing Lightning to be used in mainstream commerce. Imagining a world where millions of people are using Lightning to conduct commerce dies with the introduction of the regulatory and taxing currently in place. It was a devastating truth to stumble upon, but one that was very much real. Yeah. And that's true, right? Like, the tax and regulatory structures around it make sort of using Bitcoin for payments very, very difficult. And it's interesting, but people on the BCH never talk about this. That every time you're buying coffee on the blockchain or whatever, you have to pay taxes or be in trouble with the state or something like that. But they don't talk about it at all. Right, creating a wallet, custody, and owning Bitcoin. Many of our testers are not as familiar with Bitcoin as many reading this post. If we want millions of mainstream customers benefiting from Bitcoin and Lightning, surely we should test with that audience in mind. When asking a given user if they would buy an article for a few pennies, the answer was almost always yes. However, when they were told they required installing a Lightning wallet and buying Bitcoin, their answer was no thanks. I have a few pennies in USD. If that's not enough for an article, then I don't care to buy it. Setting up a wallet, waiting for something you don't understand to finish syncing, being limited in your ability by something called capacity, and having to buy Bitcoin and manage backups was far too much for all small users. Many of our testers didn't even get to the point of purchase. It was all a bit overwhelming. That hit me hard. Okay, I get it. Volatility and taxes are tough. But you don't even want to own Bitcoin? For fuck's sake, how am I supposed to allow you to benefit from this technology? If we look at my Olympus demo, we can see I own zero Bitcoin, and my goal was to pay the refill QR code. Do I really need to download a Lightning wallet, write down my seed phrase, back up my channels, and be exposed to tax consequences and volatility to pay the refill Lightning invoice? I was wasn't using Bitcoin for censorship resistance or privacy, as my identity and debit card was linked to my account. What if my debit card could pay the Lightning invoice? What if by connecting my bank account, I could scan any Lightning invoice, hit pay, and it would work? No wallet, no backups, no channels, no capacity, no custody issues, no volatility, no taxes. What if instead of spend and replace, I was buying and spending seconds without noticing? What if the few pennies in USD from that Bomb user was enough? What would that look like? It would look like Stripe. That's what it would look like. Really great sort of narrative on the user experience and seeing things from a user perspective. And I think I can tell, like, this sort of real light bulb moment when you realize, like, they don't want the mental cost of doing all of that. I mean, they might be able to buy 50 cents worth of Bitcoin on a Lightning channel so they can buy, pay for an article, but the mental initial setup cost was just too much. And this is the big aha moment. How do we reduce that cost? And that's what I figured out. In order to accomplish this, a debit card or a bank account would be needed to to be interoperable with Bitcoin and the Lightning network, or the entry into this new economy. Users wouldn't have to deal with volatility, they wouldn't have to deal with taxes, they wouldn't need to set up a wallet to interact with the protocols, and they wouldn't even need to own Bitcoin to scan a Lightning QR code. What if everyone's bank account could speak Bitcoin? The jump from Olympus to Stripe is quite small. We simply added a few things and removed a few things. Simple, totally ordinary and innocuous things. However, because of the way we are able to integrate them into the environment, we have this decisive impact and become extremely powerful. We aren't just changing how Bitcoin looks, but also how it feels. We're changing a consumer's relationship with Bitcoin and Lightning, how it is used and how it is viewed. We're opening up new ambitions, new ideas, new possibilities, and a new mainstream audience. So I would also say the big thing for me, at least that I got out of this, is that it changes things for the merchant. But then they get to accumulate Bitcoin. Now you have a huge audience of merchants now, right? Anyone that's a Bitcoin holder that wants a little Bitcoin, that wants to trade their goods and services Bitcoin for Bitcoin, they get a much larger audience of people that can pay them in Bitcoin, even if they don't have Bitcoin. That's huge. That's huge. We have Stripe for iOS, Android, desktop, and a browser extension. You can view a playlist of demos I put together on my YouTube channel. What this means, bank accounts and debit cards can now speak to nodes all over the world. And nodes all over the world can now speak to bank accounts and debit cards. The possibilities are endless and the sky is the limit. Can Stripe be used to buy Bitcoin? Sure. Create an invoice from your existing wallet and pay it. After completion, you'll have less fiat and Stripe and more Bitcoin in your wallet. Can Stripe be used to sell Bitcoin? Sure. Create a request to Stripe and send it to it from your wallet. After completion, you'll have more fiat and Stripe and less Bitcoin in your wallet. Can Stripe be used for remittance payments? Yes, of course, you can just scan the QR code and click pay. Can Stripe be used for internet tipping? Of course. Yes, of course, you can just scan the QR code and click pay. Is Stripe another custodial wallet? No, not at all. It owns nobody's coins and nobody's keys. If BTC is hacked and stolen, it's my BTC and I fought nobody else. That's the way it should be in a weird way. It's a beautiful and innovative hybrid. Stripe in the wild. There are real people using Stripe today. Let me tell you my favorite user story so far. My family owns a cannabis business in Colorado. In Colorado, there are only a handful of banks in the entire state willing to bank those in the cannabis industry. The wait list to be banked by ours is now longer than 2 years. Our family business struggles to stay banked, operates a security budget to protect and mitigate cash in our migrate cash in our stores, and we struggle immensely with payment processors. Those processing payments in the cannabis industry charge between 5% and 15% and are known to be unreliable and unstable. For example, ours was recently nailed for 2 months, leaving us unable to process any credit and debit card payments. This leaves businesses exposed and allows Stripe to provide a level of fault tolerance otherwise missing. So these are people that have some serious problems because they don't have a banking relationship. And as a result, they have to use payment processors that charge them over their leg. But they don't really have a choice, so that's what they do. Stripe can kind of fill in that gap, yeah, that's what you say. When I visited Colorado for Christmas, I showed my dad Stripe. We ran to this store and I demoed it to all our upper management and employees. My parents were already running our BTC pay service since it offered us a 10% discount for anyone who paid in BTC. PC, as it was so much easier for us. Except the problem was the customer was able to get a lightning wallet set up to make payments ranging from 10 cents to 5,500 bucks. With Stripe, this changes immediately. All you need is they have an identity card. We passed Stripe around to a few frequent customers and family friends, telling them if you use this app, you get a 10% discount. And more customers, young and old, are using Stripe to shop at our store, getting a discount and helping our business. Did they know what Bitcoin is? I have no idea. Did they know that they were using Bitcoin and whether that is payment mail to transfer some value? Absolutely not. Bitcoin was behind the scenes, making a difference and benefiting individual lives and businesses without anyone noticing they were even using it. The possibilities are endless. What about Twitch streamers and content creators? Content creators can set up a Stripe donation page and every time someone donates BTC, they get fiat in their bank account or whatever custom fiat BTC ratio they'd like. Magic. The smallest changes can be transformative, but they have to be the right changes. Discovering what those changes are takes patience. You have to pay attention. You have to be available in response. Basically, you have to be open to new ideas. And that's what we found. And good job, Jack. Because it really is a breakthrough, at least in my mind. The future of Lightning offers real-time cheap global settlement and self-clearing to the world's first natively digital asset class. We put in the work to make the barrier of entry low and the flexibility plus ease of use high. There's a lot of real-time programming, risk management, trading, compliance, and legal policy, application and protocol development to test. As I've said before, this is not a race, and we will go at our own pace. However, we do feel ready to expand those helping us test Stripe. So here's the plan. We will continually widen our data every week and start with the US users only until we feel comfortable opening up usage globally. Our goal is to be in a public beta and put Stripe on app stores in the coming months. This will take a community effort, a lot of testing, reporting bugs, feedback on features, and collaboration. If you would like to join the beta list, you can do so at stripe.zapphq.io. If you have a special use case and really want to start testing today, email me at zap@jackpower.com. I'd love to hear your story and get you a download. You all know me, I have big plans. Partnerships to be announced, new products and features, and events I'll be hosting in Chicago to demonstrate the tech. This is certainly exciting, but very much the beginning. Thanks. All right, everyone, that's all I have for today. Not only am I unbelievably excited, but I have a newfound sense of ambition. So this is all the thank yous, and which is great. So anyway, even more so than the user aspect, it's a merchant aspect that's really exciting to me. And I would love to be able to sell stuff like my book using a lightning invoice, but people can pay with a debit card or something like that. And Jack, I'm going to be emailing you and saying, okay, I want to, if I bring a bunch of books to like a conference or something, and I need to sell them. I want to receive in my name, but at the same time, I don't want to, force someone to go get a lightning wallet and stuff. But if they have a debit card, I want to receive it as well. So all good stuff. I think this is just absolutely fantastic. I do think this is going to be the killer for lightning. I'm thinking about using it in a way that I wasn't thinking of before, and that's what the products do. Really good stuff. Let me tell you again about a few things. Programming Bitcoin is my website, and you can see the various books and stuff on it. I do have seminars in Las Vegas, Hong Kong, and Antwerp, Belgium in the next few months. Please apply for the scholarship if you are so interested. And you can apply for the scholarship using the link in my newsletter and so on. That is about it for today. Lots of exciting stuff happening, and the year is off to a fantastic start. I can't wait for some of this stuff to really come to fruition. Taproot is obviously making progress. Exciting things on Lightning, LN URLs, and of course, Trick and things like that. That is it for today.